Im hayukula mitzad agdusha, were they all of the realm of holiness, oy mitzad hatumer achmana litzlan, or of the realm of impurity, God forbid. Dahainu, what do we mean by thoughts, words, and deeds from the realm of impurity? This means, kol amachshavos v'adiburim v'hamais, all thoughts, utterances, or actions, asher loy l'Hashem heima, which are not directed towards Hashem, towards God, and towards His will and His service, even if they are not directly sinful or violating or unclean. But they are not, they don't have a holy, productive, godly, transcendental component, which this is the meaning of the term Sitra Achira, the other side, as discussed before in chapter 6. All those perceptions, feelings, instincts, cravings, impulses that are produced from the realm in existence that projects a false image of reality come from Sitra Achira. In other words, every thought, every instinct, every word, that every word, thought, or deed not bespeaking goodness and holiness and transcendence is basically a thought, utterance, or deed perpetuating the false delusion of the other realm, which conceals the basic truth of what reality is. Now it's known that whenever a person thinks holy thoughts, he becomes during that time a chariot for the chambers of holiness, whence these thoughts originate. The machshavas, the holy thoughts, originate from the chambers of holiness. Conversely, every time he entertains in his mind impure thoughts, he becomes during this time an unclean vehicle and chariot for the heichalis, for the chambers of impurity, all impure thoughts originate, and so too with speech and action. When he thinks or says or does anything connected with transcendence, his psyche, his soul, and his body become at that time an instrument through which holiness is expressed in the world. You become a merkava for Kedusha. On the contrary, if it's in the converse fashion, heaven forbid, your psyche, your reality becomes a merkava, a chariot, through which the chambers and the world of unholiness are expressed in this world. You see, from the perspective of the Alter Rebbe, every thought is a drama. There's a drama going on. We don't treat our thoughts, our words, with such value and sacredness. But by the giants of spirituality, every nuance of a person's life is significant. It's meaningful. There's a lot of value there. So there is an entire, deep cosmic significance to a thought that you entertain in your mind. This doesn't mean that if you have an unholy craving, you should become depressed. That I'll have discussed in chapter 27. Part of life is this a struggle in the drama. That's part of our purpose in life. But man has to be aware of what is going on. Treat it with sacredness. So therefore, even this person who cannot call to mind any past sins, he can humble the smug spirit by contemplating all of his thoughts and words and deeds that he experienced from the day that he remembers himself till today. Remembering that power, sometimes he became a vehicle and an instrument where his thoughts, words, and deeds gave expression and realization to the Sitra Achira, to the false image of reality. How can you remember all your thoughts on a practical level, you don't remember all your thoughts, but you could probe into your psyche and find, even this person can find, how the untruth element of his life played and plays a role in his psyche. Besides the fact, if you're asking already, we remember everything. We remember everything. Did you never have an experience that suddenly triggered a clear visual memory of something that happened to you when you were 14 years old that you thought you forgot for 20 years? Happened 20 years ago. We remember everything. Everything is stored away. Maybe not consciously, but whatever we do creates an impact on the soul. The soul is very sensitive. It's like a sponge. It takes everything in. Good and productive things as well. When a person does good, it's not to be underestimated. The soul will remember it and will reciprocate. The converse is also true. So a person remembers. Here is the next stage. What happens if he can't even bring to mind anything of that nature? You could see what type of the people the Altareba was addressing. So the Altareba has another method. Dreams. Dreams. If you can't find it in the conscious, go to the subconscious. You see what life meant by these people. What wholesomeness meant. And you could see what a tzaddik is, not a beinoni. Pretty amazing. Let him further consider his dreams if he needs to shatter the smugness of the spirit, of the unholy spirit. In most cases, for most part, they are vanity and an affliction of the spirit, as the pasuk, this is a quote from a pasuk in Kehelos, paraphrasing the pasuk in Kehelos. Why? Mishum she'ein nafshei elu l'mayla. For his soul does not ascend heavenward during a sleep. O k'may shekasev, as it's written in Tehillim Chavdalet, mi'yala b'har Hashem, who shall ascend to the mountain of Hashem? Niki chapayim v'kaymer. He that has clean hands, and as the pasuk continues, u'bar levav, he has a pure spirit. He can ascend to the mountain of Hashem. But if the soul doesn't have that purity, so during sleep it does not ascend upwards, if the soul would be characterized, the psyche would be characterized by purity, so then during sleep it gives the soul an ability to detach itself from its prison a little bit and to recharge its batteries, to reorient itself with its childhood prior to its birth. To reorient itself with where it came from, it gets filled with spirituality, with holiness, with transcendence. But if the soul has been defiled, so it's held down. And on the other hand, the conscious is not working. The consciousness is not working 100%. So what happens? Instead of the dreams being an expression of a deeper spirituality than he was even capable of when he was awake, like we discussed before, Shavuos, the reason why the Jews wanted to go to sleep the night before Shavuos, for this reason, they wanted to liberate their souls. But if he's incapable of that, so then what do the dreams project? What our dreams project? What do we dream about? Most of our dreams, a large part, are meaningless, are senseless, sometimes worse. They're mean-spirited. They're nasty. You know what you're entertaining your dreams? Weird things. Don't talk about them now. So even if you can't deal with even if your conscious self is totally pure, go to your dreams. And he quotes now a Zohar that sometimes the inun, if your soul doesn't ascend, the inun sitrin bishin asyonam is napkin be. Those originating from the negative side come and attach themselves to him. O meidin le bechalma milin da alma v'chul. They inform him in his dreams mundane affairs. Sometimes they mock him and they show him false things. It's coming from the sitter ambition. They come to your dream and they show you false things. V'tzar in lebechel mechuli. And they torment him in his dreams and so on. As stated in the Zohar in Parshas Vayikra, page 25a and b, Ein Shom Barichus. See there in Zohar it's discussed at length. So this Beinoni, perhaps by day, when he's involved in Torah and Mitzvahs, he doesn't feel any blemish. When he's awake, he has the ability to suppress, in a subtle fashion, all the other elements of his soul. But when his dreams emerge, then he loses full control. So the other elements of his soul that have been dormant and latent suddenly lose their proper proportion, and they come out to the fore in a very revealed way as an expression of subconscious elements and dynamics existing in him. Certainly you don't have to do tshuva for your dreams, that's not what the Rebbe is suggesting, but dreams are a certain expression of what's going on in you. So in the conscious life of the Beinoni, he can be living a perfect life, but if he wants to know his situation from the bigger picture point of view, what exists in his conscious and beyond and lower than his conscious, dreams are at least a pointing arrow to that reality. He's not suggesting here to begin interpreting your dreams day and night, like some people live all day and night, they're only thinking about their dreams, but at least it's a footnote, it's an arrow to show you what is going on in the person of dreams. So the Alter Rebbe continues here, let's learn a little piece. After suggesting various meditations on different fronts concerning the unholiness embedded in man, so v'hine zogdal t'reb kol ma sheyayrich binyonim elu b'machshavte. The longer he reflects on these matters, b'machshavte, both in his own thought, v'gam biyuni b'svarim, and by delving deeply into Svarim, into books. It's not enough just to read about it in Svarim, because you have to think about it on your own. You know, ultimately, every person knows himself or herself like no one else knows you. You can explain yourself to someone else, you can express yourself to someone else, but you know what is going on in you, because it's you. So reading about it in Svarim doesn't suffice. Machshavta, you have to think about it. You have to experience it. We know ourselves like no one else knows us. We're not objective about ourselves like other people are. We're biased about ourselves. But we know ourselves to a certain degree like no one else does. There's a certain intimate level your best friend, your closest companion, your closest partner cannot know, because it's you. They have to be told about it and you experience it. On the other hand, biyunei b'svarim. Sometimes you rely only on yourself, you don't understand the significance of what you know. Biyunei b'svarim allows you to understand the significance, reading it in books, in svarim. And the point is, he reflects and thinks and meditates on these issues. Li yis li by nishbar b'kirbay. And as a result of that, he breaks down his heart, v'nivz ev'ein of nimmas kakasuv. And he renders himself in his own eyes, he becomes shamed and despicable, as it's written in the Pasuk, in the expression in Tehillim, Nivzevein of Nimos, Betachlis Hamiyus, in the utmost shame and abhorrence, that is how much he becomes despicable in his own eyes, L'mayis Chayiv Mamash. To the extent that he mamish despises his life, hare bazeh, through this memayis umevaza sitra achira. Don't think that what we are trying to encourage you is to break yourself down to become nothing. No, through this, what you are doing is you're degrading, you're breaking, you're embarrassing, you're despising the sitra achira, the other realm, umashpil ala offer. Casting it down to the ground, umayrido migdulasa, humbling it from its haughtiness, the gasus ruchan from its arrogance, the gavhusan from its self-exaltation and inflation, shemagbiyes atzmalar igdushas nefesh alikis lahach shechira, wherewith it, with this arrogance and haughtiness and smugness, it exalts itself over the light of the divine soul's holiness, obscuring its radiance, its energy, its flow of life. So when the person meditates upon his own lowliness in all the areas discussed above, he becomes frustrated with it. He shatters himself. He meditates on it and thinks it and entertains it. What this does is he busts the bubble. He shatters the arrogant wall and shell that was created by the Sitra Akhir within him, which this was the source why his divine soul was being obscured and darkened. And Alter Rebbe continues, V'gam, and another important piece of advice here, and here the Alter Rebbe presents us with a fascinating piece of advice. Treat it like it was another person. Yarim aleha b'koil rash v'reigiz l'hashpila. He should also thunder against it with a strong and raging voice in order to humble it. Thunder at it, scream at it, shout at it. K'maymer azal, as our sages state, la'olam yargiz adam yetzer teva yetzer. The Gemara says in Brachas daf hey, a person should always rouse the good impulse against the evil impulse. Shenemer, as it's written in Tehillim Perek Dalet, rigzu v'goymer. It says rigzu v'al techto, rage and don't sin. Depends what type of rage. 1 second. Depends what type of rage. This rage is productive, is healthy. You express your rage on the smugness, on the arrogance, on the complacency of the frustration of them. It's not allowing you to feel. It's creating an emotional paralysis, and it's not allowing you even to feel that. And it's building up. So there's a wall that keeps on building up in you. And it's inflated and inflated. And the heart is in the meantime dying. It's not receiving its liquid, its nourishment. So the Alter Rebbe says, you take that shell and bust it by meditation and then thunder against it. And listen to what he says. The Hainu, this means, he becomes very detailed here. He even gives the exact choice of words that you should use against it. The Hainu, this means, Lirgoiz on Nefesh HaBahamas. One should rage against his animal soul. Shehi Yitzrei Hara. Shehi Yitzrei Hara, which means the animal soul essentially is not bad. My problem is that my animal soul became one with my evil inclination. By a tzaddik, it's transformed into holiness. But in this case, the animal soul has become converted into your evil inclination, which means your animal was now not metamorphosized, but it was slept down and it's inclining towards negativity, towards ego, towards evil. Shehi Yitzhara, you should rage against the soul, b'koil rash v'reigiz b'machshavta, with a voice of stormy indignation in your mind. Dr. Rebbe says there's no need for you to verbalize it and make a show, to put it on public display that other people should be entertained. It's a personal, individualistic process. But it's as if you're saying it. Lay my light to say it. If you want to verbalize it, you may verbalize it. But the point is that it's an individualistic process. But identify it as if you're talking to someone. And this is what you should tell your negative, egotistical, animalistic inclination. The following words. Atara, you are evil. V'rasha, you are wicked. U'meshukitz, you are abominable. U'metuav, you are abhorrent. U'menuvel, you are disgraceful. V'chuli, and so forth. K'chol ha'shemes, shekar alei chachameinu zal. Using all the epithets, all the names and titles by which our sages have called it. And you should say, be'emes, you're taker. Ra'an, rasha, meshukitz, metuav, u'menuvel. This is not exaggeration. This is not a metaphor. It's true that you are so. What When a man enters into a state of emotional paralysis, the way to revive him is to smack it in the face. Timtum alev is like an emotional coma. The heart gets covered up with many coverings. It's unreceptive and unresponsive. What is the problem? What is the solution, Dr. Rebbe is saying? The reason that this smugness could black and conceal the heart is because the heart begins identifying with the animal soul. For him, the heart and the smugness become one. So it's not a chitzitza anymore. It doesn't create a partition anymore. It becomes you. Why do we become timtum? Why do we have timtum alev? Not because we have an animal soul, because we do allow the animal soul to define ourselves. So my heart becomes part of the smug, egotistical experience of the animal soul. The main ammunition of the Yetzirah is that it dresses up in elegant clothes. That we should feel comfortable being its close friend. They once asked Reb Naftali Rabshitzer, where does the Yetzirah live? Where does he abide? He says, in places where you would never expect that he should live there. He doesn't come dressed as a Rosh Meshukah. He dresses himself in elegant, sophisticated clothes. You should be able to feel a kinship with it. I'm sophisticated. So what is Dr. Rebbe's solution? Not you're going to get rid of your animal soul, but identify the thief. Say, you are despicable. You are lying. You are distorting reality. You are distorting me. Identify it. The heart and the smugness have become one. That kinship, that complacency where it's good must be shattered, must be broken. You must embarrass the shell. You have to shatter this wholesomeness because it's not a real wholesomeness. It's a fake wholesomeness. There is this complacency because my heart and my animal soul became one. This must be broken. How does a person do it? He gets frustrated and he thunders against it. And he uses all these terms. Know what you are. Someone asked me last week, Dr. Eber in chapter 27 said, you shouldn't get depressed about these things. You shouldn't get depressed about the fact that you have cravings and lusts and urges towards unholiness. That's coming from arrogance. You're not supposed to expect anything else. You're not a tzaddik. This is your purpose in life. But there's a big difference. That's fine. Don't get depressed about it. But here there's a different issue. Here, the negativity, the klipa in yourself has inflated itself to the extent that it's not allowing you to feel another self. Dr. Rebbe is saying, just put it in its place. Remember what it is. Talk to it. Remember who you are. You're bad. You're nothing. You're despicable. You're abhorrent. You're a Rasha. You're a Meshukitz. Know who you are. Should I get depressed because you exist in my life? No. Hashem wanted me to have you in my life. But let's remember who you are. And don't blow yourself to the extent that, you're the person. Eblevi Yitzchak bar Ditchever. Once came into Hakafas. He came to the shtender, and everyone was waiting, he should begin Ataresa. And he's not beginning. And they see he would wear a talis. Under his talis, he's debating with someone. What happened to the Rebbe? Who is he talking to under his talis? The conversation continues for a long time. Suddenly, he gives a strong knock bang on the shtender, and he said, Eib dubis the chassid, Eib dubis the lamdin, Eib dubis the yirishamayim zagdu ataresa. If you are the chassid, if you are the learned Jew, if you are the God-fearing person, why don't you say ataresa? And he took off his talus and he went away. Who was it? It was the Ra, Rosh, Meshukitz, Menuv, Metuvel, came into his life. You're saying ataresa, I'm here with you to celebrate. Levitzchak says, how do you come in here? I studied at the feet of the Maggid of Mizrich. You were there. He says, where you were, I was also there. He says, but I learned so and so much and so much. I was there in the learning. but I did these and these mitzvahs. I was there in the learning. He says, I turned to him and said, if you're the chassid, you're the lamb, then you're there. You fattered it, but get me out of here. Identifying it. Put it in its place. Tell it what it is. Splinter the log. Don't be such a dense log. Who do you think you are? You're a Ra, you're a Rosh Meshukitz. Don't do it to someone else, but do it to yourself. Other people are mahadir in this peyrik concerning someone else. But who am I? I'm Toiv, I'm Kadosh, I'm Tzaddik, I'm Nivdol, I'm Tohir, I'm a Malach Elokim. To your smug spirit, to your arrogant spirit, say it. You have to say it. The Alter Rebbe continues this paragraph. It concludes this paragraph. And you continue. And here there's an interesting distinction. The Alter Rebbe employs in this area a powerful Musardik approach. But look at the continuation of it. You don't just stop there. You're bad, you're evil, you're negative. Ad Masai Taster Lefanai, Eirein Seif Baruch Hu Amamali Kol Alman. How long will you obscure from me the light of the Endless One, the energy of godliness of Hashem, which pervades all the worlds? Haya Hayve V'Yiye B'Shava. He was, he is, and he will be the same. Gam b'mokim zeshani alav. Even in the very place where I stand, he wasn't just existing and exists and will exist at the Kaisel Maravi in the Beis Hamikdash in the seventh heaven in Gan Eden and so forth. In this very space where I exist, internal and out, external. K'may shahaya eden sev baruch olavade kaidim shenivra elam belushim shinui. Just as the light of the blessed Ein Sof was alone before the world was created, without any change, utterly unchanged. K'may shekasev, as the pasuk says in Malachi, Ani Hashem lo yishin nisi'ai, Hashem have not changed, ki ulamayla mazman v'chuli, for he transcends time and so forth. So the creation did not create any change in that fact. V'ata menuvel v'chulu, but you repulsive one. He continues, you repulsive one, and so forth. Deny the truth which is so plainly visible. The kula kame kilei mamish be'emes. That all is truly as nothing in his presence. Bibchinis yichushes, which is visible to the eye, which means it's such a conspicuous reality. And you come and you inflate yourself, and you, with your abhorrent, repulsive self, totally obscures for me this truth. To the extent that I'm incapable of perceiving it, of emotionally feeling it, of responding to it, and so forth. If you're in touch with reality, kula kamei kilei mamish, as discussed in the earlier chapters at length, that the same intimate essence of Hashem that existed prior to the creation of the world exists in this space at this time. So the whole world, which comes from Hashem's utterance, is absolutely insignificant in comparison to what reality is. And this klipa perception is just creating a wall that's concealing and obscuring it. So Alter Rebbe says, this frustration that you let out against it, you get it out of your system, you separate it from yourself, that's healthy. That's healthy rage. That is a healthy rage. Why? It's not a rage which is shattering you essentially. It's a rage which is directed against a shell in your life. That's good. Get angry. Identify it. That, first of all, separates it. There's a distinction between the I and that. And it reduces its inflation, which has gotten out, which was too much, which was too large, too big. It reduces it, it diminishes it. And then, as he will continue, yourself can reemerge. Let me... conclude with a little story concerning this issue. The Gemara says in Tainus Daf Chaf, page 20, Daf Chaf Amid Aleph at the bottom, a story about Rebbe Lezer, the son of Reb Shimon, who was coming from Migdal Gedor, that's the place of the city, from his teachers, from his Rebbe's house. He was traveling along a riverbank. V'samach simcha gdoila, he was extremely joyous and satisfied, feeling very proud of himself, because he learned so much Torah for a good reason. As he was traveling at the river bank, he met a person, Shahaya Mechur B'Yaser, who was exceedingly ugly. The person sees Rebbe Lazar, the son of Reb Shimon. Rebbe Lazar was one of the greatest spiritual Torah giants of his generation. He says, Shalom Aleichem Rabbi, the Jew says. Peace unto you, my teacher. Rebbe Lazar did not respond. Instead, Rebbe Lazar told him something else. Empty one, how ugly are you? Tell me, are all the residents of your city as ugly as you are? The man wasn't a shaita, he wasn't a fool. He said, I don't know. I don't know if they're all as ugly as I am. But why don't you go to the craftsman who made me and tell him, how ugly is this vessel that you made? Leichve merlu uman shasa ani kama mechur klei zesha sisa. Rebbe Lazar realized he erred. He went off from his donkey. He prostrated himself to this person. And he said, I have spoken wrongly. Please forgive me. So the man said, I will not forgive you until you go to the craftsman who made me and tell him how ugly is this vessel that you made. The Gemara continues that Rebbe Lazar traveled behind him, seeking his forgiveness until they reached the city. When they arrived, all the people of the city came out to greet Rebbe Lazar. And everyone was saying, Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi, Rabbi, Shalom Aleichem, Mighty, Mighty, peace unto you, our Rebbe, our Master, our Teacher. So this man, who greeted Rebbe Lazar initially, asks them, to whom are you calling Rebbe, Rebbe, Mighty, Mighty? Who is this master, this teacher? They say, to the Jew who is traveling right behind you. So this man responds, he says, Mzeh Rabbi, al yirbu kemaisi b'Yisrael. If this person is a leader, is a teacher, may there not be many like him in Israel. Said to him, why? He told him the story, what Rebbe Lazar told him. So they told him, forgive him, because he's a great Torah giant. So he said to them, for your sake I will forgive him, with one condition. He should not make a habit of doing these things. Shelo yehi ragel asaske. He forgave him. And the Gemara says, immediately Rebbe Lazar, the son of Reb Shimon, went into the Beis Medrash, to the Torah study center, and he said, a person should always be soft like a reed, and not hard like a cedar. You imagine you're in a very bad mood. You're in a bad mood. It happens. Tiptum alav, yeah? You're numb. You feel sick about everything. Everything is bad. Life is bad. You're devastating. Everyone you have a relationship is lousy. And you're going in the street. You're driving in your car. And someone turns to you and says, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? But you're in a miserable mood. What do you do? You're not interested in responding to him. But since you're a half a mensch, you don't even have to be a complete mensch. And since you're not insane, So you say, hi, how are you? And you go on. If you're really in a miserable mood, you don't answer. The person says, okay, you must have had a hard day. Here you're dealing not with a mensch or a half a mensch. You're dealing with one of the greatest Torah dons of the generation who just finished learning Torah. Supposed to refine a person. Is going home. A Jew meets him. The Jew doesn't look nice. Tells him, Shalom Aleichem Rebbe. You don't want to respond, Nu, also nish menschlich. Say Shalom. Say one word. You're so miserable, you don't like him. Don't say anything. It's also pasnish. Nu. Empty one. How ugly you are. Tell me, is everyone in your city as ugly as you are? Gewalt! This is a Yid. This is a mensch. This is a Rebbe. Furthermore, you know, Rashi and Tosfos write, they cite an opinion that who was the man? Prophet Elijah. Eliyahu HaNavi came to teach him a lesson. If I misbehave, I don't have Eliyahu HaNavi coming teaching me lessons. If Elijah had Prophet Elijah coming down and teaching him moral lessons, how one is to behave. And such a human being is capable of responding such a way to a person. And it's interesting. He refuses to forgive him. When he does forgive him, and the Marsha makes a big tumult from this, what does he say? He doesn't say, never do it again. He says, don't make a habit out of doing it. Sometimes you can do it, it just shouldn't become a habit. The Rebbe once explained the story based on the message of Tanya chapter 29. A lengthy explanation, but briefly it was thus. Rebbe Lazar was a deep man, a spiritual individual who cared for his fellow man. His insight was extremely keen and his perception profound. As he saw this Jew, the ugliness he saw on his face was just a physical expression of a spiritual lowliness that characterized his life. Chachmas Adam Toyer Panov, the Pasuk says. The wisdom of a man comes through his face. A sensitive person knows that a person's facial features express your inner psyche. Looking at this person, he saw a man whose soul was buried under mountains and mountains of husks and layers and coverings. A person who has fallen to such great depths that he couldn't even experience any more frustration from his lowliness. That's how estranged, that's how alienated he was from his own soul. In normal circumstances, a person who has fallen, you encourage. You talk to him about the beauty existing within him, the spirituality of his life, the inner aristocracy and regality of his divinity, how his behavior should be an expression of his true self. But what happens if that true self has been relegated to the subconscious of your identity? You can't address it anymore. You don't have anything to hold on to. There has to be some goodness which is still conspicuous that you can grab onto and recreate the person from that goodness. But if the goodness was totally blocked away, totally finds itself captive and buried, you don't have that anymore. The shell, the husk of the ego has grown so deep, so big. Rebbe Lazar said, Gewalt, Father in heaven, how can I save a soul? He felt the only way is the smugness was so deep, you have to bust the bubble. So he turns to the Jew and he says, empty one, how ugly are you? Maybe your whole city is as ugly as you are. Maybe the circumstances in which you were brought up, the environment in which you grew up, induced this upon you. But look what's happening. Your life is an embodiment of meaninglessness, of senselessness. Empty one. What happened? Reb Elezer said this, and what did he say? He says, I don't know. Why don't you go to the craftsman who made me and tell him how ugly is your vessel? What happened? Reb Elezer busted the bubble? And this is the response that came out as a consequence of Reb Elezer's words. The person, for the first time in his life, felt that someone made him. He felt worthwhile. He felt value to his life. For the first time, he felt, I matter. There's a craftsman that made me for a purpose, like you make a vessel. You don't just make it so that he should float in a little planet called Earth with a purpose, with a mission. Those very words devastated the husk. So what came out? Came out a feeling, a sense of self, a sense that I'm worthwhile. That my existence has validity, destiny, direction, and purpose. So later when he forgives Reb Elezer, he doesn't say, never do it. Don't make a habit out of doing it. Sometimes this approach is an approach. On yourself, it's not such a seldom approach. But when you are employing it towards someone else, don't make a habit out of doing it. In this case, it seems that he felt Reb Elezer was wrong. He didn't want to forgive him. Because the very fact, the Rebbe said, that the response came so fast and so powerful meant that the ugliness wasn't as awesome as Reb Elezer conceived it initially. So in this case, there might have been a little miscalculation. But the Leich Lomen Shasani is not a refutal. It's not in spite of what Reb Elezer said. It's because of what Reb Elezer said. He heard for the first time in his life that there's a Oman. Rashi and Tosfos write that Rashi says that there is a girsa that it's Eliyahu Hanavi. Tosfos writes that a Mesichta Derech Eretz, it says that it's Eliyahu HaNavi. In our versions of Masechta Derech Eretz, it doesn't say. But Eliyahu HaNavi could have disguised himself as such. Or, according to other many commentators, it wasn't Eliyahu HaNavi. It was just a normal Navi. So the point is not the breaking. The point is allowing the inner divinity to emerge. But if there's a big shell, that has to be broken. Have a good day and a wonderful week. Now, there is, we'll now take, it's always sad to say goodbye. There was once, the daughter of the Rebbe Meirash, Rebbetzin Tver Aleya, was once, she was a little girl and she didn't get a toy. Her toy broke, they gave her a toy, so she started to weep. And she wept, she was weeping for 3-4 hours, and then she got tired, so she stopped. She said, I'm not stopping to weep. I'm just taking a little break. But I'll soon start again. The Rebbe once concluded a Fabrengen. He said the story. And he says, we're not stopping the Fabrengen. We're just taking a little break in order to Fabrengen. I am, Emirtz Hashem, traveling tomorrow to Eretz Yisrael, to the Holy Land, for the summer. I hope you can all follow us very soon, even before tomorrow. Boy mebaya, boy mebaya. We need the boy, Ha'ish Mekadesh boy. And the Mirtz Hashem, we will return here in the month of Elul, the beginning of Elul. It's mid-August. I'm not sure now exactly the date, but to stay in touch a few days later. And in the meantime, we should have the strength and the courage to internalize the first 29 chapters of Tanya. I think it's enough homework for the summer. And you should all have a healthy and joyous Summer. Awesome. Seid gesund.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or albums, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.